Good evening. We are in the book of Philemon this evening, and what we'll do this evening is look at an introduction to the book of Philemon, and Scott will take up Sunday with going into detail into the book. We've been studying the prison epistles in our class. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. In these books, Paul calls himself a prisoner of the Lord. And in this introduction to Philemon, what I'd like to do is just we'll look briefly at a map of Colossae in relation to the city of Rome. We'll look at some summary points and purpose of the letter of Philemon. We'll take a look at the period and location of the writing, some observations and applications of the letter. I'd like to look at a little bit about slavery in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And then we'll look at have a brief outline of the book of Philemon. This is a map that Scott had for us in a previous class. And I just wanted to put this up here to give us an idea in our mind of the geographical location of... And I don't know that I've used the pointer before. There. Colossae, and it's not going to help, is it, with me shaking? Philippi. Ephesus, Colossae, Philippi, and then Rome. Well, I seem to have lost a little bit of control on the mouse. It's not working for me. Okay. What'd you say? Okay. It looked like it had a full symbol on it. But just think about some summary points on the letter to Philemon. Philemon had a servant named Onesimus. Onesimus, as Paul describes him in the book of Philemon, Philemon chapter 1, and I'll just refer to it as Philemon chapter 1, even though that's the only chapter. Philemon 1, verse 11, Paul even describes Philemon, or Onesimus, as unprofitable, and he also ran away. In Philemon chapter 1, verse 11, Paul said, "In time past was to thee unprofitable." It's interesting that the name Onesimus, I understand, means profitable or useful. But here, Paul describes him to Philemon as, you know, at one time he was not useful to you, but now he is, as a brother in Christ. Paul was in prison, as we see in Philemon chapter 1, verse 1. Paul was a prisoner of the Lord. He was in prison, in bonds, when he converted Onesimus. In Philemon 1, verse 1, Paul, a prisoner of Jesus Christ, and Timothy, our brother, unto Philemon. And then in verse 10, I beseech thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds. So Paul was in prison when he converted Onesimus, and afterward Onesimus returned to Philemon. In Acts chapter 28, verse 30, a passage we've mentioned before in the class. In Acts chapter 28, it describes how that in Rome, Paul was for a couple of years under house arrest. We would describe in verse 30, it says, Paul dwelt two whole years in his own hired house and received all that came unto him. You know, could it be that during this time, might it have been that Onesimus had come to Paul at this time, and Paul, at the time of the writing in which Acts 28 and verse 30 is written, that Paul met Onesimus and converted him? Could it have been at that time? This letter is Paul's plea. The book of Philemon is a letter in which Paul is pleading or beseeching Onesimus, or beseeching Philemon, to receive back Onesimus. In Philemon chapter 1 and verse 17, Paul said, If thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. So in this letter, Paul is writing to Philemon. His servant has run away. Paul converts him and he says, receive him back. Just like you would me. Treat him just as you would myself. Let's look now just at a little bit at the period and the location of the writing of the book of Philemon. Philemon may have been written. Do you all have control over the slides with the mouse? Okay. Let's see. Philemon may have been written during the same period as the letter to the book of the letter to the Colossians. Albert Barnes, one commentator, lists several reasons or ideas along that line, a couple of which I took here and put on the slides. Paul was a prisoner under the writing of both letters, the letter to the Colossians, letter to Philemon, and Timothy was with him in both letters. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 1, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and Timotheus, our brother. Philemon 1 verse 1 also mentions Timothy. The salutations of each of these books, the letter to the Colossians, the letter to Philemon, the salutations from these two books list the same group of men, Aristarchus, Marcus, Epaphras, Luke, and Demas. In Colossians 4, verses 10 through 14, list those men, Colossians 4, verses 10 through 14. And then in Philemon 1, verses 23 and 24, there salute thee, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, Marcus, Aristarchus, Demas, Lucas, my fellow laborers. And so, in the writing of Philemon, the writing of the book of Colossians, a number of men are listed as being with Paul. He's in prison. And a number of the same men are listed as being with him. I don't know about the timing of the book, but it's an interesting point to think about. Some think also that Philemon, and you could advance the slide, thank you. Some think that Philemon and then Onesimus might have been part of the church at Colossae. I'm not sure. It does sound plausible. Especially one passage of note is in Colossians chapter 4, verses 7, 8, and 9. Colossians 4, 7, 8, and 9. And again, going back to one of the reasons I showed the map of the layout of the relationship between Colossae and Rome. It could have been that I take it that Onesimus, when he ran away, went to Rome. There Paul met him and converted him. But it could be, as some think, that Philemon was part of the church at Colossae. In Colossians 4, verses 7, 8, and 9, let me read those verses. All my state shall Tychicus declare unto you, who is a beloved brother and a faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord. So I take it that here's a letter that Paul wrote, and Tychicus was going to deliver that letter to the brethren at Colossae. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you, they shall make known unto you all things which are done here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, salutes you, and Marcus, sister, son to Barnabas, touching whom you received commandments. If he come unto you, receive him. And just noting there in bold, the statement in verse 9, with Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you. So Paul is writing to the church at Colossae, and he mentions a brother named Onesimus. For all I know, Onesimus could have been named like John. I don't know. One thing I wondered about here, and I have a question on the board for you, and you can help me in this regard. When I read Colossians 4, Colossians 4, verse 9, I get the idea. It just seems like this Onesimus that Paul is writing about in Colossians 4, verse 9, is not a new convert. And it sounds like to me that he's a part of the church there. But what about that phrase, who is one of you? A faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. What does that mean? If Paul meant by that, who is from your same region or your same city, that Onesimus, the slave, the servant, that would seem to fit. If he meant by that, and I guess I've thought that he meant of the church there, the church at Colossae, to me it doesn't quite fit as much. Onesimus was converted away from Colossae. He was not a part of the church at Colossae. Maybe unless Philemon was written prior to Colossians and more time had elapsed between the letters. But what do you all think in that regard? Some of these points are just interesting to note, and in your study you'll run across these points, I believe. And so in study, and I saw that, and I began thinking about that question myself in regard to that phrase, "Who is one of you?" Any comments on that? If you have come. Okay.
And so, yet, if he was a Christian now and Colossae was his hometown,
okay,
when he goes back there, he would be member of that congregation. So maybe Paul is thinking along that line.
Presupposing or.
Yeah, presupposing that.
Okay.
But it's hard to say for sure. In Colossians 4:12,
okay,
Paul uses the same designation of Epaphras, who was also with him. He says, Epaphras, who is one of them.
Okay.
So probably whatever he means with Epaphras, he means about the same thing that Onesimus.
Okay. I'd like to look more along that line. Okay. Okay, so just to repeat your comment, I had not thought about that option. That would be a third option here. Who is one of you, meaning of that region, of that city, Colossae? Secondly, could it be of the church of the Colossians? Or thirdly, as Buford Craig is pointing out, could it be that he's a brother? He's one of you, a brother, a faithful brother. Okay, thank you for the comments. Another passage along that line, in Colossians 4, verse 17, both the letter to the Colossians, the letter to the Philemon, mention a man by the name of Archippus, who was in Colossae with Philemon. In Colossians 4, verse 17, "And say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it." Archippus, you've got a responsibility, and say to him, Your fellow brother, fulfill your obligation. In Philemon chapter 1, verse 2. Philemon 1 and verse 2. "And to our beloved Apphia and Archippus, our fellow soldier, and to the church in thy house." Another question I had along that line, "and to the church in thy house." In thinking about the question again, here Paul is writing the books of Colossians and Philemon, possibly about the same time, from prison in Rome, and he sends the letter to the brethren at Colossae at the hands of Tychicus, and Onesimus is with him, and then he also returns to Philemon in Colossae. But here's this man named Archippus, who is with Philemon in the same area, but it mentions to the church in thy house. Would that church be Colossae? Would that be another church? I hadn't thought of it as Colossae, but if Philemon is living in Colossae and a part of that, the church that Paul is writing to, it just seems a little different to describe it that way in verse 2 in general. Maybe not. But just a question. Any comments along that line? The bottom line is, I'm not sure myself, but it's just some things interesting to weave together and to look at and consider. Just some observations and applications of the book of Philemon. Again, We're just looking at a different ways of an overview or an introduction to the book of Philemon. And I thought I had some observations and some applications of the book. One commentator described the book of Philemon as a model of courtesy and politeness. And I think that's a good point. And I wrote down some passages in this chapter that show that these expressions of courtesy and politeness that Paul had in writing toward Philemon, he expresses in the first part of the verse, first part of the chapter, verses 4 through 7, some true expressions of praise and admiration. Some terms that Paul uses to Philemon: I beseech thee, verse 9. And then in verse 14, he tells Philemon, without your mind, I wouldn't do anything. I'm not going to keep Onesimus here with me. I'd like to. He's a benefit to me, but I wouldn't do anything without your okay. And then in verse 17, he says, if you count me a partner, receive him like you would me. And then in verse 18 and 19, Paul tells Philemon, if Onesimus has wronged you, and I don't know that he had, but Paul is saying, well, if he has, put that on my tab. Put that on my account. I will repay it. Verse 20, yea, brother, let me have joy of thee in the Lord. Refresh my bowels in the Lord. And then at the end of the letter to Philemon, he expresses confidence and friendship toward Philemon. Just a number of examples of courtesy and politeness. I think that's some good application of the book to note how that Paul speaks to his friend Philemon. Comments along that line. Another thing I was thinking about in looking at the book of Philemon, and especially Onesimus and his obligation to Philemon, the fact that he was a servant, a runaway servant of Philemon's. I don't know the details of Onesimus' servitude to Philemon, the extent of his servitude to Philemon, but I do see from this book that he had an obligation to Philemon. And as I was thinking about looking at the obligation that Onesimus had to Philemon, I was considering that actually the book describes three men under obligation: Paul himself and Philemon and Onesimus. There are passages that describe different types of obligation that each of these men had. And I'd like to just look briefly at this as an application of the book. Onesimus, Paul says in verse 12, he says, I sent him back. Paul converted Onesimus there at Rome, and he sends him back to Philemon, his master. And to me, that implies that Paul, Onesimus, or both of them understood that that Onesimus had an obligation to fulfill toward Philemon. And we've looked in our previous classes in the book of Ephesians, Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 8, Colossians 3, verses 22 through 25, some responsibilities that a servant has toward his master. And when I say I don't know the extent of Philemon's or Onesimus' responsibility toward Philemon, he could have just been a man that said, I'll work for you for a certain amount of time, for certain wages or whatever, and he shirked his responsibility. But he had responsibility. He had obligation to Philemon in some way. Paul himself, I would say, was a man under obligation. Paul sent him back, verse 12, Philemon 1, verse 12, whom I have sent again. Without your consent, Paul said, I didn't want to do anything. Verse 14. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 17, along that line and an application of that, Romans 12 verse 17, Apostle Paul said, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Philemon, I'm not going to take advantage of you. I'd like to keep Onesimus here. I'd like him to help me. But he has an obligation to you. I'm going to send him back. I don't have a right without your consent to keep him. Philemon himself, I think we see some obligation that Philemon had as Paul is beseeching Philemon to accept him back, receive him. I would say, some subjection that Philemon would have toward Paul as an apostle, as a friend. And in this continual beseeching, I plead him, you know, accept him back, take him back, just like you would me. And all of these expressions of confidence and friendship that Paul has toward Philemon, we see in that, I think, Philemon's subjection to the Apostle Paul. So, three men, as an application to the book of Philemon, three men under obligation. Onesimus had the obligation to return to his master. The Apostle Paul couldn't keep him. He wanted to do things honest in the sight of all men. Philemon himself had a responsibility to take him back and to forgive him. Comments or questions along that line? Another look at application and in this book of Philemon. Again, some things I was wanting to do, just to go back to one of the previous slides at the very beginning of the class, look at some summary points and the purpose of the letter, the location of the writing, some observations and applications of the letter, and also look at slavery in the Old and the New Testament. Something that is interesting to me, and something I believe, in light of the fact that Onesimus was a servant to Philemon, thinking more about that in regard to our covenant, our law, the law, the same law that Paul lived under, the same law that Philemon and Onesimus lived under at that time, at the time of the writing of this book. In Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 10 through 14, Deuteronomy chapter 20, I'll read this out of the New American Standard, and I have it written on the board. At the beginning of Deuteronomy 20, verse 1, "When you go out to battle against your enemies and see horses and chariots and people more numerous than you, do not be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, who has brought you up from the land of Egypt, is with you." So you're going into the land to conquer the land. "I'm going to be with you," the Lord said. "But you'll come against your enemies." And here's some of the things that they were allowed and given the ability to do against their enemies. "When you approach a city to fight against it, you shall offer it terms of peace. And it shall come about if it agrees to make peace with you and opens to you, then it shall be that all the people who are found in it shall become your forced labor and shall serve you. However, if it does not make peace with you, but makes war against you, then you shall besiege it. And when the Lord your God gives it to your hand, you shall strike all the men in it with the edge of the sword. Only the women and the children and the animals and all that is in the city, all its spoil, you shall take as booty for yourselves, and you shall use the spoil of your enemies, which the Lord your God has given you." So the Lord is saying, go into this city, make war against. If they surrender, you'll make them forced labor. If they fight against you, you'll kill the men. You'll take the women and the animals and things of that city as spoils, spoils of war. And this is something that God allowed Israel to do under their covenant. But they were not allowed to force fellow Israelites into slavery. In Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 7, Deuteronomy 24 and verse 7, "If a man is caught kidnapping any of his countrymen of the sons of Israel, and he deals with him violently or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from among you." So Israel could force their enemy into slavery, but they could not force a fellow Israelite into slavery. They could work him with an obligation. In Leviticus chapter 25, the idea of an indentured servant. While I'm turning there, any comments or questions? Leviticus chapter 25, verse 39. "And if a countryman of yours becomes so poor in regard to you that he sells himself to you, you shall not subject him to a slave service. He shall be with you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner with you until the year of Jubilee. He shall then go out from you, he and his sons with him, and shall go back to his family. He may return to the property of his forefathers. For they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold in a slave sale. You shall not rule over him with severity, but are to revere your God." So again, in summary, Israel could force their enemies into slavery, but they could not force a fellow Israelite into slavery. And they could have an indentured servant. But looking at slavery under the New Testament, our law, the law that Philemon lived under, the law that Paul, at the time of this writing, the time that he lived under, in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. That last passage we read in Leviticus mentions kidnappers and slavery and selling the slave. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for holy, unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for menslayers, for fornicators, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be anything other than, any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine, one of which he notes in verse 10, men stealers, kidnappers, or slave traders, the idea would be. I think of the kind of thing that went on early in our history. You know, someone would go to another land, they would take someone by force, steal them, take them out of their country and bring them back and sell them. The kind of thing that we see that Israel could do. They could take their enemy and force him into slavery. The very thing that Israel could do from Deuteronomy chapter 20, Christians cannot do today. 1 Timothy 1. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 44 and 45, while I'm turning there, any comments or questions? Matthew 5, 44 and 45, but I say unto you, love your enemies. And this is the Sermon on the Mount, in which I believe Jesus is describing New Covenant law that we live under, law that His hearers were kingdom prospects, you might say, those who were going to be, could come under the reign and rule of Christ under His New Covenant. But He was showing them what the New Covenant was going to be like, much like in John chapter 3 and verse 5, in which Jesus told Nicodemus, to enter the kingdom of God, you must be born again. Nicodemus didn't have to be baptized then, but He was showing him this is a part of kingdom law that is coming, that we today live under. And likewise, in Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus was talking to prospects of the kingdom and showing them what His covenant would be like. Verse 44, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Love your enemies. And so under the New Covenant, Paul would condemn men stealers. Jesus shows us here, love your enemies. Matthew 7, verse 12, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them? Again, so under the Old Covenant, they could do things that we today cannot do. And Deuteronomy chapter 20 describes those kind of things. I don't know the details of Onesimus' obligation. Again, you know, in looking again at an overview of the book of Philemon, I'm just myself, I'm not sure about his obligation. I know that he did have an obligation to Philemon, and Paul sent him back that he should fulfill that obligation. Even though we don't know the details of Onesimus' obligation to Philemon, we do understand the differences in the Old and the New Covenants. And today we live under the New Covenant. Philemon lived under the New Covenant. And some of the very things that the law of Moses allowed, our law, our covenant, Paul's covenant, Philemon's covenant, did not allow. Again, contrast in Deuteronomy 20 with Matthew 5. You can force your enemy into, and you war against the city. You put him into forced slavery. Matthew 5, love your enemies. We see that contrast. Just a simple outline of the book of Philemon. In the first three verses, we have a salutation of Paul to Philemon and others in that area. Not only Philemon, Archippus, and others. In verses 4 through 7, we see Paul describing Philemon's faith and his love. And then in 8 through 22, the body of the text, we see Paul's appeal to Philemon on behalf of Onesimus to receive him back. And the final greetings in verses 23 through 25. comments or questions? I think this is quicker than I've ever had my material to finish out under from underneath me. But comments or questions? I had thought about that, and Steve is looking at the use of the word "if" there. Back in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1, in a previous class I taught, in Colossians 3 and verse 1, if you then be risen with Christ, he's not saying, well, I'm not sure whether you are or not. He's saying, since you're raised with Christ, here's the way you ought to live. Since you are, you know, here's your responsibility. So if in the sense of since, not a question, I guess maybe I should look at some other translations on verse 18. But I thought about that, and it just, the second phrase in verse 18 kind of turned me back, maybe, or kept me, or oweth thee aught, if he hath wronged thee, or oweth thee aught. It's like an unknown, wronged you or owes you, maybe two different things, if he's done one or the other. Put that on my account. Since he's done, I guess that if I were to say since he's done one or the other, meaning that would make it seem to make it that Paul didn't know. But then if he's saying since he had done it, then he does know. So either he does or he doesn't. And I just was in a battle in my mind over that. But I should have mentioned that that's a good point to think, for us to think about. The word if would not necessarily in every context mean there's a question, but could just mean in the sense of since it is so. But I still have a question in my mind. I'd like to look at that more. Mike, do you have a comment? And if in Colossians 4 verse 9, if that is the same Onesimus, here Paul describes him as a faithful brother, a faithful and beloved brother. So he had changed, like Mike is showing, Onesimus had changed. He had certainly become profitable, whereas once before he was not profitable to Philemon. Thank you. Like verse 21, Paul showing confidence that Philemon would do. In fact, he says, having confidence in thy obedience, I wrote unto thee, knowing that thou wilt also do more than I say. Paul says, I know Philemon, you know, the kind of brother he was. You'll do more than I say. So he expected Philemon to accept him back. Got a few more minutes. I'll start calling on others for comments. Scott. A string of them. So maybe the main point of the letter was in application to Philemon, but you're right, he lists a number of people in the, like if you were to send an email, you'd put two and just put a string of them here. Okay, CC'd a number of people, maybe mainly to Philemon, but here's others, Archippus, the church, Apphia. Our brethren. Okay, so Mike just noting that now this the master and servant are both Christians, both brethren. Well, if there's no other comment, we'll end the class a little early. Thank you for your comments.